Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes.
Today on the Mountain Grapevine, we have Whit Winslow. Whit works for the North Carolina Wine and Grape Growers Council as the executive director, and he reports to the North Carolina Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services within the state of North Carolina. So, Whit, tell us a little bit about who you are and where you came from and how it came to be that you're the executive director, and what kinds of things does the Wine and Grape Growers Council do in North Carolina?
First of all, thanks for having me on the show today.
My pleasure.
As you mentioned, I'm serving as the executive director of the North Carolina Wine and Grape Growers Council, a position I've happily held for 3 years now. I got started in this because the wine industry in North Carolina is very much a mix between tourism and agriculture, and both of which are backgrounds of mine. Grew up on a small farm in the eastern part of North Carolina, went to school for a degree in tourism and marketing, and it seemed to be a fit, especially since I enjoy wine myself.
Well, certainly there are a lot of people out listening that enjoy drinking the wine, but when you get into the business of it, it's really quite complicated and quite involved. Tell us a little bit about how you came to be the executive director.
The position came about as the council was created nearly 30 years ago. It was created by the legislature as a way to promote the growing North Carolina grape and wine industry. So they created this council, which is the North Carolina Wine and Grape Growers Council, to kind of help guide that industry and that growth and help facilitate it. And as an advisory committee, there had to be someone to kind of help enact the visions of that committee for the future growth of the industry.
Was the proposal to form the council, did that come from the grassroots efforts, or was that something that the government came up with on their own?
It was a combination of both, actually. There was a kind of an alliance between certain key members of the starting the budding industry, if you'll pardon the pun, with legislatures at the state level. And they understood that this was a potential cash cow for the state, that this was a booming industry, and they wanted to help facilitate it as best as they could.
Been a lot of growth in the viticulture industry in North Carolina in that period of time. You want to share with our listeners just or how big that has been or how much that has been?
When I first came on, we were at about 120, I don't have the exact number, but right around 120 wineries in the state, and that was late 2012. And as of today, there are about 160 wineries in the state. So a growth of about 40 wineries in 3 years.
That's pretty good.
It's a pretty good number, yeah.
What about the cideries and meaderies? Do you count that in the winery count?
We do, absolutely, because they are wines as well. You know, fruit wine and honey wine, we consider those as well, for sure. And those are definitely growing industries as well, or, you know, sub-industries within the greater wine industry that we work with. Both of those are growing with great success in the state.
Tell me a little bit about the actions of the Grape Council.
Well, I do a little bit of everything. So I work with the government side, being the Department of Agriculture, to help facilitate the growth from the agricultural standpoint. We want great wineries, and we want those to be with North Carolina grapes. We have a great opportunity to grow some fantastic fruit here in this state, all over the state, different varieties, mountains to coast. And we want to make that as appealing as possible to potential wineries, potential fresh fruit marketers, everybody that might be interested to help the industry growing.
Do you get involved at all in any of the value-added products on the viticulture side?
We work with all of these value-added products that are made in North Carolina. Wine is the most obvious one with the grape industry, but we work with people that make jams and jellies, people that make nutraceuticals, people that make juices, all kinds of things statewide.
If somebody were to call you from the mountains and say, hey, we're getting 5 to 10 tons of grapes this next season, where could I sell them? Is that the kind of thing you could help with?
It is. I'd be happy to help them with that, and it's the kind of thing that I've done for folks in the past when they contact me. One thing that we're actually looking at to kind of develop is to make a way for that to be even easier. there are situations where I hear after the fact, unfortunately, where people will say, hey, I could have used a few more grapes of this variety, and someone else saying, hey, I had a few grapes that I didn't get to sell. And so I would like to get to a point where we can kind of put those people in contact in a timely manner where that is mitigated, where these folks that want good fruit have access to it.
Are you involved at all in the standards or the quality standards for grapes or wine?
I am not personally involved with that. We want to increase the number of phenomenal wines that are being created around the state, but I do not have a science background to facilitate that portion of the growth in the industry. However, we are working with different aspects of the state, including Appalachian State University up your way, is working on a quality alliance program to help wineries statewide of all types to kind of ensure that they have a quality product before they slap a label on there and try and sell it. And they identify any faults within the wine, and they'll help you identify remedies for potential faults as well. And then at the state level, the Department of Agriculture has a team that can help with identifying quality fruit as well at the vineyard and the farm level.
This leads me to another question I have here is we've had some serious conversations here in the mountains and certainly down in the Piedmont area where we spend most of our time about the grapes that are used to make a North Carolina wine. And this has always been something that comes up every trade association meeting we have. Says, how can they call that a North Carolina wine when they're buying half of their grapes from South Carolina? That kind of thing. Do you know of any movement underway or anything that's in the work to try to fix a percentage, you know, concentration to be called a North Carolina wine?
I stay out of the legislative aspect. As a state employee, I'm not allowed to lobby in any direction. But I do know that there is chatter in the industry about those sorts of things, and that it is a concern for the industry that for our sustained growth, we want to be using North Carolina fruit. And there are great wineries out there using, you know, fruit from elsewhere, but there's great potential to use fruit from here. And so we're just trying to help those folks be able to do that.
Let me share with you a couple of things that we're doing here on our end of the state to try to improve the image of North Carolina wines. The French Broad Vignerons have taken upon themselves to do two things here. One is we've gotten involved on the tourism side of things because, like you said, tourism and viticulture is just inherently connected. What we've done is we've gone out and approached the Great Smoky Mountain Railroad, and they used to have something like a wine car experience similar to what they do in California. And they were serving a whole bunch of wines out there that were not North Carolina wine. So we went out and made it a point to develop a special way to present good and only good North Carolina wines that we have judged and that have been approved by the independent judges that we have trained for judging wines. Because the people get on the wine train, or the wine car experience, we call it, walk away with tasting some of the best wines in North Carolina. No mediocre wines, no crappy wines, just the best. And they are absolutely astounded how good of wines that we can make in the state. The second thing we're doing is we're independently going out to all of the major restaurants in this area who have no North Carolina wine on their wine list and setting up wine tastings for them for good North Carolina wine so they can have an idea of which wines that they could put onto their wine list in their local restaurants for the local foods. And this is becoming tremendously successful here in this part of the state. And I'm just wondering if that's the kind of thing that you look at and doing in the rest of the state for developing the image of North Carolina wines and the quality and so forth.
It is. First of all, congratulations on the wine train. I've heard good things about that. I need to get back out to Smoky Mountain area and do it myself. But you've created a great reputation around that. But you're right. It is the kind of thing that we do. In addition to great programs like yours promoting things like that, we are also working with restaurants around the state. The Department of Agriculture has a great relationship with lots of restaurateurs statewide, and working with programs like that to highlight North Carolina wines to these restaurateurs to make sure that they are on their menus. And that has been successful. Obviously, we want them in every menu, but that's something that we're working toward and creating kind of an opportunity to present these wines to restaurants at a broad scale. Wineries already are taking their product to the restaurants and to local stores to showcase their product, present their quality wines to these folks to then present to the public. And so that is something that we're just trying to help facilitate.
Well, we've done one other thing here, too. Before we got involved, there were no wine trails out here in the Piedmont in the mountain area, and we've now put together 4 different wine trails, but not only the trails, but we're also contracting to do the actual transportations. We have meet at a point, they pay a fixed fee, includes the transportation to and from the wineries, so you don't have to worry about having a designated driver. This also is proving to be extremely popular, and the wineries are just tickled to death. They say they've never had so much revenue come out of one busload of people as the ones that we bring to them. It's really a steep learning curve for us, as well as a lot of the wineries and even the vineyards in this area. We're trying to find new ideas to bring into our region. It's fun to see that somebody else is doing it. And I know that you folks are having some play on the billboards and the signage on the roads. How does that work?
First of all, I really love to hear things like that about the wine trail, because as a state agency, and the Wine and Grape Council represents the entire state, and so we can't single out any one area, any one winery, any one region to promote, or even any one type of grape for that matter. So I love to hear all of these individual wineries coming together to work together toward their goals, because that's something I can't do for them. That's one thing that they kind of have to take on themselves, and I love to hear success stories like that where it's working out.
Here's the fundamental problem with putting together wine trails. They have tried it on their own here locally. The wineries that we talk to who try to do the wine trails end up having a self-serving interest when they do it. For example, the vineyard says, we're going to have a wine trail with XYZ next door and CDF on down the road. Whoever it does takes a lead. It just looks like that they're doing more promoting of their winery than they are of the other wineries on the trail. When we took it on as the French Broad Vignerons, we don't have an axe to grind with any of these people. And people saw that as a disinterested third party putting together these wine tours and featuring the different types of activities that we do in conjunction with these, and they were much more receptive to it. And especially since we put the package together of not just the wine trail, but the tour buses and the transportation to and from, that was the clincher for us in this area.
And you're right. I've seen that as well, where when a group of wineries come together, there's a lot of self-interest promoting going on in certain cases. And by no means should that be considered every case. There are a lot of groups like this, wine trails, that are brought forth by an individual winery to connect other wineries in their area, and they work perfectly, seamlessly, and do a great job. But it is nice when you have an agency such as yours, French Broad Vignerons, in a certain area that is willing to kind of be that outside party to kind of assist with those things, because you don't have necessarily a winery on the trail, and so you are a little more even keel in the promotion of the trail. And so that's not something that every part of the state has the luxury of being exposed to, but it is great when that's possible. Now, I say that, but really, there are a lot of cases where winery-led trails are working as well. So I know that is a concern with some of the others I've heard in the past.
So we've been talking with Whit Winslow, who's the executive director of the North Carolina Wine and Grape Growers Council here in North Carolina. And we're going to take a break at this point, and we'll be right back. So hang on, everybody. We'll be right back.
Today's program is being brought to you by Samuel Stackhouse's Spit Sack. Most of the farmers and homesteaders here in Madison County are smokeless tobacco users. It's a rare day when you don't see at least one person pull a small can of snuff out of their back pants pocket or overalls and put a pinch of snuff between their lower lip and gums. Samuel Stackhouse is one of those guys. But when it becomes necessary to spit, it starts looking really gross. Samuel started dating Sissy Siltmeyer, and she quickly let it be known that she didn't appreciate his gross habit of spitting all the time. Sissy was a smart gal, and pretty too, so Samuel had to do something. Giving up his snuff wasn't going to work for him. He started watching all of his buddies around the area where he hung out Friday and Saturday night, and watched how they handled the ladies in spitting. Most just spit in the ground. Some spit on the floor of the bar where they had to beer now and then. Some carried a cup, can, or bottle to spit into when the urge came round. Samuel had to admit, it did look gross to be carrying around a nasty can, cup, or bottle half full of tobacco spit. That's when he got an idea. His Uncle Cedric had been in the hospital where he had an operation and had to have a colostomy bag installed on his side. Samuel decided that he could use a plastic bag hanging inside his pants leg, fitted with a piece of tubing to run up under his shirt near his collar. He could then tilt his head slightly down and to the left and spit into the tubing, hitting just under his shirt collar. He could then throw away his filled spit bag when no one was around to see and replace it with a new disposable bag. I guess that worked for Sissy. They're fixing to get married next spring.
His spitzhack invention has made him a wealthy man. Nearly all the mountain men out this way have one. He does offer a suggestion, though. If you've had one too many beers, you might miss spitting into the tubing. Really makes a mess on your t-shirt and underwear, he says. Samuel Stackhouse's Spitzhack is another great product made in the USA here in Madison County, North Carolina. You can buy Samuel Stackhouse's Spitzhacks for $1.298 at Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall. And now back to our regular program.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Mountain Grapevine Radio program. We've been talking on the phone with Whit Winslow. Let's talk a little bit about production contracts. Don't seem to have that out here. What's your thoughts on that?
Those actually do exist around the state, and you can find some examples from pretty much most regions statewide. They sometimes will discuss 5 tons of grapes, or it may discuss 1.5 acres of vineyard specifically dedicated to this winery at the end of harvest. And those are not uncommon. A lot of times you will have the winery will have someone out there checking on the vines every week or every 2 weeks, working with the vineyard manager to make sure that, you know, the grapes that they're ultimately going to be end up using are kind of what they're looking for. And so they'll work with the vineyard manager all throughout the season to kind of ensure that things are going the direction that they have in mind for the final outcome in their wine. So, yeah, those are fairly somewhat common, at least throughout the state, with people supplementing their own vineyards or just using North Carolina grapes from other folks to supply their winery wherever they may be located.
Just to clarify, what I thought I heard is you were talking about an area that was under contract, like 1.5 acres, as opposed to X number of tons from that vineyard. Is that right?
Yeah, so those are both examples of how folks statewide may do it.
Within the contract itself, does it make allowances for being over, under, or very specific, says whatever comes from that 1.5 acres we get?
That's getting very specific with the individual contracts, and I'm not privy to, you know, private company contracts to know that information exactly. But I've heard through the grapevine that folks will...
Thanks for the free plug there, Whit.
Yeah. I've heard that folks will kind of identify a quality standard within their contract. So we are looking for X, X, and X factors within the fruit that comes from this acreage that we're buying. And anything that doesn't meet these pre-discussed standards will either buy at a reduced rate or just not take.
Whit, let's talk about the types of educational activities that your North Carolina Wine and Grape Growers Council gets involved with respect to education, special types of classes that you can conduct or participate in, anything like that?
In the past, we've worked with the Global GAP certification to kind of identify or to help farmers identify solutions for their problems as far as making sure they have quality fruit. But a lot of times what our education revolves around is either working with universities statewide or working with commodity associations statewide. And so we work with groups that or researchers that are identifying problems within the state or identifying solutions within the state. There are two commodity groups that operate statewide, mountains to coast, and so we work with those groups, the North Carolina Wine Growers Association and the North Carolina Muscadine Grape Growers Association, to help facilitate some of their educational concerns with their membership as well. Both recently had their annual conference where they hold lots of educational seminars that are great for winemakers, fruit growers, everyone in between. We work with groups like that as well to, you know, help educate the industry at the ground level.
Being out here in the western part of the state, we've got 23 mountain counties, and we've got some special problems here. Cold weather and steep slopes being one of them. Are you aware of any courses or classes or help that would come in that area?
I believe that some of the courses at Appalachian State are not so much dedicated toward the agricultural standpoint of growing grapes in that area, but do offer solutions in terms of some of the conditions that you find down the road with when you turn those grapes into wine. Appalachian State has a great fermentation sciences program, and they are seeking solutions for situations just like that. Then Surrey Community College and North Carolina State University both are looking into situations like that statewide, and that would certainly include the mountains, the hilly western part of the state.
Well, even living here in the mountains where we are, we're still about 3-hour drive one way from here to App State and a little bit more than that to Surrey. It's been a challenge for us in the past just because of the time factor. The distance is not so great, but it's mountain roads. You know, out in your neck of the woods, you can do 1 mile in 1 minute, you know, to figure out how long it takes to get someplace. Down here, it's more like 1 mile maybe in 2 minutes or 3 minutes. So it's quite a haul for us in terms of time one way to get up there. And a lot of people here have sort of begged off of taking classes up there because of that distance problem or time problem. Whit, how is the North Carolina Wine and Grape Council funded?
So the Wine and Grape Council is funded directly by the legislature. We get an appropriated amount each year in about $500,000 directly from the Legislative General Fund.
How many people make up the North Carolina Wine and Grape Council, and who are those people?
So the council is made up of 10 people appointed by the commissioner from around the industry. They make up people from the muscadine sector, vinifera sector, all the way from the coast to the mountains. So it's a pretty good mattering of people, if you will. The chair of the committee is Mark Frislowski from Childress Vineyards, and Irvin Leinberger from Killdeer Farm is the vice chair. And then the other 8 members include Bob Hennett from Hennett Family Vineyards, Amy Helton with Hanover Park Vineyards, Bill Hatcher at Duplin Winery, Chuck Johnson, he's with Windsor Run Cellars and Shadow Spring Vineyards. Then we have Bill Giese from Shelton, Ron Taylor from Lou Mill Vineyard, Chuck Pickering from the Biltmore Estate Vineyards, and Larry Cagle with Woodmill Winery.
And how often do these people meet?
They meet quarterly, actually. Every now and then we'll throw in an extra meeting for good measure to make sure we have everything covered. But we try and meet at least once a quarter.
And where do the meetings take place?
They vary. We meet in Raleigh sometimes. We meet in Greensboro. We meet at different places all over the state.
Share with the folks who are listening with how the money actually flows through. I'm still somewhat puzzled at, and I'm on the board of directors, as you know, as vice president of the North Carolina Muscadine Grape Association. Say, for example, you got $100,000 that comes to the Grape Council.
So it actually goes to the Department of Agriculture. The Grape Council is an advisory group that helps us identify the use of those funds. The funds actually go to the Department of Agriculture, and we're charged with the responsibility of executing those funds.
And what part goes to the actual Grape Council directly for pass-through to the viticulture industry, or either muscadine or vinifera sides?
All of it goes to the wine and grape industry in the state. All 100% of those funds are earmarked for that. The Wine and Grape Council is charged with identifying the needs within the state, the areas of concern, and the areas of potential growth. And they make recommendations to the Department of Agriculture and tell the Department of Agriculture in a lot of cases, this is what we feel is the best use of these funds this year, and the Department of Agriculture carries out those plans.
It's the State General Fund now that provides the funding that goes to the Department of Agriculture. Department of Agriculture passes through those funds to the viticulture industry upon recommendations of the Grape Growers Council. In terms of how this would help out here, does some of that funding get earmarked for like the billboards along the highways?
Absolutely. Billboards are something that would fall into the marketing portion of that budget. The budget is divided up by the council into different categories, and categories you can expect to see are going to be research and development and marketing. The council has had a great run with billboards over the past many years, advertising the wine industry statewide. We'd have billboards out at the Outer Banks. We'd have billboards right at the North Carolina-Tennessee line and everywhere in between. It's been a great driver of people to the wineries. This year, actually, we decided to reallocate those funds and put them toward other projects. It was felt that the billboards were maybe not quite as beneficial to the industry as a whole as they are to individual wineries. Without a specific destination to drive motorists to, we felt that there were better opportunities to spend those funds to help folks get to the wineries themselves without naming anyone individually.
Well, Whit, we certainly appreciated the time you spent with us this afternoon, and I personally appreciate the fact that you've taken time with us to help educate us a little bit about how your end of the viticulture industry is working here in the state of North Carolina. I'm sure our listeners will have learned a lot once they listen to all the things that we've been talking about today. How can somebody contact you or the organization there? What's your contact information?
My name is Whit Winslow, and that is actually my email address as well. It is Whit, W-H-I-T, dot Winslow, W-I-N-S-L-O-W, at ncagr.gov. That is the Department of Agriculture home email address name. So again, it's Whit.Winslow at ncagr.gov.
To make sure that everybody can hear it clearly, it's Whit, W-H-I-T, dot Winslow, W-I-N-S-L-O-W, at N-C, for North Carolina, A-G-R, like agriculture, A-G-R, dot gov, G-O-V.
And I appreciate you reiterating that. It must be my Eastern North Carolina accent, but people have a hard time understanding me sometimes.
And you were going to give us some other contact information?
My phone number, if anybody wanted to reach me by voice, is 919-538-3994. That's area code 919-538-3994.
Do you folks do Facebook or Twitter or any of that stuff?
We do. We are NC Wines on Twitter and North Carolina Wine on Facebook, and we also have an Instagram account, which is NC Wine as well.
Gee, aren't you coming up in the world out there? Just in case somebody wanted to stop by and visit you in the neck of the woods, do you have an address where your office is located?
We're at 2 West Edenton Street, right in downtown Raleigh. So we're situated perfectly between the North Carolina History Museum and the North Carolina Science Museum.
Well, that sounds like an appropriate location.
Absolutely. We kind of blend the two here, don't we?
Absolutely do. Whit, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I'm sure our audience is really going to be appreciative of all the information you've been sharing.
Well, thank you, Chuck. I appreciate you talking with me.
Okay, folks, that's a wrap for today's program. Thanks for tuning in.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Madison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
And by the way, folks, there's a class coming up about growing grapes in the mountains on February 25th at Saturday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Jewel of the Blue Ridge Vineyard. The title of the class is Vineyard Location Design, so that you can figure out if your farm is appropriate to put in a vineyard. For more information, you can call me at 828-606-3130 or log on to our website, www.jewelofthebluridge.com.
This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!